Hi there, welcome to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Justine Toe.
And I'm Simon Smart.
Now, Australian scholar Toby Miller says that we inhabit a worldwide crisis of belonging, a population crisis of who, what, when and where. More people feel as though they do not belong, more people are applying to belong, and more people are not counted as belonging. So we live in a world where people are on the move all the time, whether from situations they're fleeing from situations of conflict or maybe persecution and discrimination from their government. And the refugee debate has been particularly raging in Australia over the last couple of years. I'm sure we all remember when John Howard won the 2004 election by saying, "We will decide who comes into this country and the circumstances in which they come." And since then we've had the Pacific solution, the Malaysia solution, and all the while the mental health toll on detainees is getting worse and worse. The picture is pretty grim, but there are some bright spots. The work of many faith-based organisations that seek to care for asylum seekers. Now today, I'm really pleased to have Erin Wilson in the studio. She's the director of the University of Groningen's Centre for Religion, Conflict and the Public Domain. And before she took up this posting in the Netherlands, her research looked at the role that faith-based organisations played in caring for refugees, and that's what you're here to tell us about. Welcome to the program, Erin.
Thanks for having me.
Can you give us a snapshot of what sorts of services these faith-based organisations provide to refugees?
Yeah, sure. Faith-based organisations provide a variety of services. So it can be anything from assistance with rent, food vouchers, assistance with finding health services, right up to providing legal services, also lobbying the government on policy issues. It's very varied. Also providing them with language classes or access to social services of various different types.
Do they have access to refugees before they're even in a position to look for health services? Like when they first arrive, are they just then kind of swallowed up by the government people, or is it just are the faith-based organisations on the ground and helping in that, in those early stages as well?
In terms of people who arrive on the ground with their refugee status already recognised, they already have access to a wide range of social services. They get a lot of support from the government for settling into the country, and they get put in touch with various different social service providers in the area that they've been placed in. In other instances, migrants and refugees will seek out faith communities, and they become connected to faith-based organisations through that. In the instance of asylum seekers, the asylum seekers are, depending on how they arrive in the country, if they arrive by plane, they're generally put in community housing and they're put in touch with social service providers, which are often faith-based organisations. If they arrive by boat, then they're placed in detention, and then the faith-based organisations will access the detention centres and visit them on a regular basis, provide them with phone cards so that they can call friends and family. Just having someone to sit and chat with is a big thing for people who are in these detention centres, because they often have no idea how long they're going to be there for. So having them, people go there to say, look, we actually do care for you and we're interested in you, can have a big impact on how welcome they feel when they arrive in the country.
Erin, from researching your work with these organisations, you've come up with the term faithful hospitality to describe the efforts and the orientation of the organisation. Tell us a bit more about what that means, because we often think of hospitality in the context of the hospitality industry, where you kind of pay for something and you get a service.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. In this instance, hospitality is an ancient tradition within religions, and what it's talking about specifically is hospitality to the stranger. So it's not hospitality in terms of a service that is paid for, but it's hospitality that is provided free of charge, generously, to a foreigner who is in your land. And we see examples of this in particularly in the Judeo-Christian scriptures, but there's examples in Islam and a variety of different religious traditions. And the idea is that the foreigner is vulnerable and they need assistance where they arrive. And the term faithful hospitality, instead, there are a variety of different terms that get used, like biblical hospitality or faith-based hospitality. I prefer the term faithful hospitality because I think it's important to make a distinction between organisations that provide services purely because they have the resources to do it, and organisations who provide this service because they believe it is what they are called to do as a result of their faith convictions.
It's very much part of who they are.
Yeah.
So it motivates what they do and so on. And as you say, it's a gift to people.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've had Luke Bretherton in the studio, and I know you've read his work as well. He says that hospitality lies at the heart of the Christian faith, and you've already noted that biblical tradition of caring for strangers and exiles and widows and orphans, so the vulnerable people among you, but also the foreigners who are with you as well. So, but you've also done some thinking about how hospitality, if it lies at the Christian faith, it's also to do with, you know, God's relationship with humans as well. Are we welcomed by God?
Absolutely. And I think that is one of the big challenges for religious organisations, but particularly for Christian organisations in the refugee and asylum seeker debate, is that what God's hospitality means is that everybody is welcomed. The gift of grace is there for all who want it, all who choose to accept it. As God's representatives in the world, I think the Christian churches need to be participating in this provision of hospitality to those who are vulnerable, and to make it, ensure that it is made available to all of those who seek it. Obviously, when it gets into policy and how that is enacted in practical circumstances, there are restrictions that have to be placed on that. But the ethic of grace and the ethic of hospitality to the stranger should always lie at the heart of services of hospitality.
I wanted to just ask you about that, because sometimes people are wary of faith-based organisations getting in on this sort of work, because the fear is that they'll be proselytising people who are already vulnerable. That's a reasonable fear, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. The interviews that I did with workers in faith-based organisations was that they were very conscious of this, and they tended not to talk openly about their own faith. I interviewed a sister from the Brigidine Asylum Seeker Project, which is associated with the Brigidine Nuns in Melbourne, and she would go and visit asylum seekers in detention centres. She wouldn't tell them that she was a nun. She'd just go and visit. And the only way that it would come up would be if someone said to her, "Would you pray about this for me?" And she would then say, "Well, yes, I can do that. And I know some other people who are praying kind of people, and I'll ask them to pray for you too." So they're very, because they're conscious that there is a power imbalance in the relationship, and they don't want to be seen to be using that for any sort of, you know, conversion or anything like that.
Yeah, and so you can imagine people thinking, oh, this is kind of a sinister thing. There's sort of the motivation for it is questionable. But what you're describing is people who see this as a kind of core of a motivating part of their faith in order to do good in and of itself, you know, the value of that, rather than some other goal, which is to sort of bring people into your club.
Yeah. I don't even know that it's doing good for the sake of doing good. I think for them, they are incredibly passionate about the dignity of every human being. And that's why they do this, because they want to see that these people are, that their dignity is recognised, that their rights are recognised, and that we acknowledge their humanity and not treat them like an other, like an object that is foreign, that should be excluded, but that they are welcome and that they should be part of, made to feel part of the community. It's one of the positive aspects of faith-based organisations being involved in this area is that a lot of asylum seekers and refugees are religious themselves. They're not necessarily Christian. A lot of asylum seekers and refugees in Australia are Muslim. Some of them are Hindu. Some are Buddhist. What happens, though, is that there is this shared sense of belief in something. There is a shared sense of religion and of spirituality, and that provides a connection with these faith-based organisations that often doesn't exist with people from secular organisations. So that's a really important part of why faith-based organisations are and should be involved in the provision of services in this area.
So people can feel like there's some connection with the person that's offering this help, whereas in certain situations they might feel quite foreign, more and more foreign than perhaps they're already feeling.
Yeah, because they have this sort of shared sense of their shared values and shared worldviews in some sense. They're able to say things like, "Would you pray for me about this?" Whereas saying that to someone from a secular organisation, they wouldn't necessarily get the same response. The relationship is sort of impeded in that sense, yeah.
Can I just ask, if religious organisations or faith-based organisations partner with the government to deliver these kinds of services, does that compromise their ability in any way to speak out against government policy? I mean, we've just had in the news recently, the Australian government has been, what's being talked about is that the Australian government is redirecting millions of its foreign aid budget to its own refugee program. So it's like You know, Australia will be the third largest recipient of its own aid or something like that. Yeah. Erin, if faith-based organisations actually, you know, work with the state to deliver these services to refugees, does that in any way compromise their ability to speak out against government policy?
In general, most faith-based organisations are very aware of this and they don't want to compromise their independence. So most of them actually don't accept government funding. And those that do don't allow that to affect their capacity to criticise government policy. So as one example, the Brotherhood of St Lawrence in Melbourne were very critical of the introduction of the Pacific Solution and as a result didn't receive any government funding for about 10 years, which they were quite fine about, like that's just the way it is. And they wouldn't want to curb what they say on these issues purely to receive funding. Another example was the Hotham Mission Asylum Seeker Project. They introduced a model called community care, which was an alternative to mandatory detention for asylum seekers. And this was, they were using this in the early 2000s, and the government actually approached them about implementing this model for the government in their policy, and they refused because they didn't want to be beholden to the government on it. So the government then approached the Red Cross instead.
Erin, people often use the language of human rights to argue against the detention of asylum seekers because it violates their rights, in this way of speaking. But you've drawn attention to the fact that there are limits to this kind of language because human rights can only be guaranteed by the state. And refugees are stateless people, so it puts that whole dynamic in danger.
Refugees, they're not necessarily stateless people, but there are people who don't enjoy the protection of the state of which they're a citizen. And so what that means in the current international system is that they have to be able to access, another state has to agree to provide them with protection. And if no other state does, then what do they do? And I think the problem with rights as a discourse is that it has a tendency to become quite legalistic, and so it becomes all about rules and who is responsible and who isn't. And I think that's part of the beauty of the notion of hospitality, is that it's able to expand this notion of rights to not just say, well, this person is entitled to this because they are a member of this state, or this person is entitled to this because this international treaty says that they are. The notion of hospitality, particularly coming from religious tradition, says this person is deserving of respect and dignity, and it is our responsibility to ensure that they receive that.
In the same way, in a family, you don't sit around saying, you know, you have this particular right and this right and so on. You negotiate negotiating things within the context of relationship and community. Mm. That's a big difference, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think rights has a tendency to sort of objectify the individual in a sense, and it removes remove what makes them human. And I'm not at all saying that we should do away with the concept of rights. I think the concept of rights is incredibly important, and it's a linchpin for justice in contemporary international politics. But I think we need to complement this with notions of belonging, of relationship, of acceptance, of grace, of justice, in order to ensure that people are honoured, people are welcomed, people are respected.
Can I ask you, as someone who works in this field and has done a lot of thinking about it, are you feeling optimistic about the way this whole thing's playing out?
The national debate in Australia saddens me. It's polarised, there's sort of extreme views being expressed, and there's very little effort to try and come up with alternative ways of talking about this. I think that is where faith-based organisations can play a role, is to sort of, and have started to play a role. World Vision have also sort of spoken out on this and recognised that caricatures about the situation, about refugees and asylum seekers that are being made in this context. And we need to move past those. We need to start having intelligent, nuanced debate about these issues, recognising the humanity of people, recognising the multiple reasons why people flee, why they seek protection. It's not simply because they're economic migrants looking for a better life.
Okay, we've been talking with Erin Wilson about the notion of faithful hospitality and how that grounds the ethic of faith-based organisations, particularly in the way that they care for refugees and help them feel at home in a new place that can be very foreign and different and hostile. So it's a wonderful notion of faithful hospitality. Thank you very much, Erin.
Thank you.